All right, welcome back, folks. Leading off the show today, as always, is our very own Luke Jones on this very special Friday post-Thanksgiving edition. Black Friday sales everywhere, including Coons Ford of Baltimore, all throughout the weekend. So come on out, see us, check us out, and I'll save yourself a ton of money. Luke, great to have you on, my friend.
Dennis, how are you? Happy Thanksgiving. I hope you had a great day with family. I hope everyone listening had a great day with family, friends, whoever you were spending the day with. And it's good to talk with you on this post-Thanksgiving edition.
Absolutely. My nickname during the holidays is umpire because I spend a lot of time behind the plate. So, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But quiet week for the Ravens. Thankfully, after that great win over the Cincinnati Bengals Thursday a week ago, and we watched some football last Sunday, you and I, and also all day long during Thanksgiving Day. But I know that before we get into the Steelers and the Browns matchup that happened last Sunday, let's talk about the Chargers and the Packers because I didn't see that game, but you did.
Yeah, I mean, I saw bits and pieces of it. I was watching Red Zone, and the game that I had been watching ended, and I was able to watch the end of that. But I think, first of all, this is nothing new with the Los Angeles slash San Diego Chargers. I mean, a team that has talent, a team that looks good, and at times has even looked better than good. It's looked really good at times, but maddeningly inconsistent. Defensively, they're not very good, and I think that's going to be such a big key for the Ravens. But I think where you do need to, if you're John Harbaugh's team and you're looking at this game and you're preparing, you've had some extra time here, you got off your feet over the weekend. The mini bye that comes on the other side of a Thursday night game that we always talk about, and also I think there's the mental aspect of knowing that the bye follows this game on Sunday night. The Ravens need to be ready and prepared to go out there and play a good football game because Justin Herbert's having a really good year. I mean, I know he's one of these quarterbacks that, especially Lamar Jackson fans, Ravens fans, who at times have felt that Lamar has been slighted or maybe not appreciated around the league as much as he has been. And on the flip side, Justin Herbert at times, it's been perceived or labeled that he's been anointed as an elite quarterback, and what has he ever done? He hasn't won a playoff game, all that. And I hear all that. He's a good football player, and he's a heck of a quarterback. And if you watch that game in Green Bay this past Sunday, he was not the reason they lost. I mean, how he performed in that game reminded me a little bit of how Lamar Jackson played for the first 55 minutes of that Steelers game back in Week 5, where you look at the numbers and it doesn't match how well he played. I mean, Herbert, I think there were five, six, seven drops in that game, which obviously that was the case for the Ravens against the Steelers back in Week 5. And I mean, he threw late in that game, they're trailing. He threw an absolutely gorgeous deep ball on the run that rookie Quentin Johnson just dropped. It was brutal. I mean, it was really something that completely sunk them, when they had a chance to win the game on that play. So just I think from that standpoint, it was, a typical Chargers game, probably would be the best way to put it. As someone who doesn't watch them every week, but certainly understands where the Chargers have been, but they're capable and they do have a really good offense, and specifically their passing game is, I wouldn't say, let me rephrase that. I don't think they have a really good offense overall, but I do think they have a really good passing game. But it's very clear what they want to do. It's Justin Herbert throwing the ball to Keenan Allen. If you look at the numbers, I mean, Keenan Allen has already gone over 1,000 yards this year. And you look at the stats, Josh Palmer is second in receiving yards, and he's on IR. I mean, there are other receivers. I think Herbert's tried his best to get them involved, but it kind of reflects what I just mentioned, drops and guys that just aren't consistent enough. Now, in fairness, Keenan Allen had some of those drops in Sunday's game, but he is someone who has a track record. So if you're the Ravens defense, certainly with Justin Herbert, you know what he can do with his arm. He is capable of moving with his legs and getting out of the pocket. We have seen that happen to the Ravens. Their defense is as formidable, as good as the pass rush has been of late. We have seen some quarterbacks leak from the pocket and pick up some yardage. We saw Watson do that. We saw both Bengals quarterbacks do that a couple times in this past Thursday night's games. So You got to watch for that, and you've got to have a plan for Keenan Allen. I mean, if you know, Dennis, I know you love to cite Bill Belichick and the Patriots' way of always kind of focusing in on taking away what a team does best and force them to play, you know, whether it's left-handed or just force them to go to other guys. I think if you can do that against the Chargers, you feel pretty good about that. And I get it. They have Austin Eckler, you know, but at the same time, is Austin Eckler having his best season? No, I mean, he's not. So I think it's quite clear what the Ravens need to do against that Chargers offense. It's just a matter of going out and executing and doing it. And on the flip side, Chargers defense has been pretty bad overall. I mean, they do have some good players on that defense. They have played pretty decent football at times, but looking at this on paper, and we'll get to it, you know, because we'll talk about Mark Andrews here in a few moments, I'm sure. But, you know, the Ravens, they go out and play, you know, it doesn't have to be a perfect football game offensively, but just go out and play good, solid, smart, you know, limit the turnovers, that kind of a football game. They shouldn't have too many problems, because you look at this Chargers defense and, you know, the rush defense is 12th in rushing yards allowed, but, you know, look at it in terms of efficiency. You know, you can run it on them, and you can certainly throw the football on them, as they came into the week dead last in passing yards allowed per game. So, you know, them playing specifically going back to the Green Bay game, it's a game that I think coulda, shoulda, woulda won. But at the same time, they made Jordan Love, who, by the way, looked pretty good on Thanksgiving as well. So maybe you give the young Packers quarterback a little bit of credit, but they made Jordan Love look pretty darn good in that game. And the Chargers defense has had a reputation of kind of the opposing offense getting healthy, getting well, playing them on a weekly basis. So, you know, those were my impressions of this game. But hey, you know, you got to go out and play well. Long trip. You don't want to be looking ahead to the bye week. Certainly, this is a weary football team at this point, the Ravens. I mean, and I say that giving them credit for how well they've continued to play, but they haven't had their bye week yet. I mean, you look at how many guys are on the injury report. They're banged up. So, you know, it's a Chargers team that on paper you should go out and win, but certainly not a layup. It's not a game where you just roll the ball out and expect to win either.
Well, the Chargers, Luke, have no shortage of issues, whether you want to start with the stadium, right? No real home field advantage. You know, they're still the San Diego Chargers to me. We can call them LA, whatever. And then there's the head coach, Brandon Staley, who's come under fire. His comments went viral. I'm looking at a headline right now. Ex-NFL coach Rex Ryan eviscerates Chargers Brandon Staley, tells him to go back to D3 football. You got Peter King, Mike, and Bill Belichick that you just referenced to the Chargers, Cowboys, or the Panthers. But that's one of the three teams Peter King has linked Bill Belichick to. So they do have some problems. And it seems to me, watching his presser, Luke, and look, maybe it's irresponsible for me to say so, but it looks like he may be losing the team, but his seat is getting very, very warm right now, if not hot.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, we didn't mention, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Joey Bosa went to IR, foot injury in that same Packers game I was referencing. But yeah, I mean, and look, Dennis, you know me, I like analytics. I like teams that start thinking about things unconventionally. You know, there's so much groupthink in the NFL and just pro sports in general. You know, groupthink kind of dominated, you know, the conversation for such a long time.
Sure.
So when he first came in, and he was one of those coaches that said, hey, we're going to go for it on fourth down, and we're going to do things like that. And, you know, he early on, you know, it kind of worked for the Chargers, and he was kind of viewed as an early darling. But since then, it has really gone sideways. And look, you can talk about issues like that, but ultimately, what are you doing over the course of 60 minutes on a weekly basis? And he's a defensive coach, and their defense has largely been bad for most of his tenure. And yet you look at them and say, all right, they have Joey Bosa. And I get it. Bosa's had injuries. I understand that. But you have Bosa and you have Derwin James. And, you know, even though he hasn't really panned out, but, you know, Kenneth Murray was a first round inside linebacker. We were talking in the same year as Patrick Queen, right? There's a lot of debate about which one the Ravens might draft, you know, going back to then. You know, they have Khalil Mack. I mean, you look at them on defense and you say, even fully acknowledging that, yeah, you need to have not just a good starting 11, but you need depth pieces as well. But I just named off four or five different guys that are either high profile or guys that have been Pro Bowl type, you know, in the case of Khalil Mack even, and Bosa, even better than that. So you look at them and say, how is that defense as bad as it is, when you, especially when you have a defensive-minded coach? So it's not good. Certainly, his look, you know, his post-game session with the media after that Sunday game, I mean, really bad look. And I know, you know, we've talked about this before. I mean, winning the press conference, and I say this as a media guy who attends lots of press conferences, winning the press conference ultimately is overrated at the end of the day. At the same time, when you start talking in terms of questioning reporters on how they should or should not be doing their job, talking about, you know, when you're asked about the fan base perception and saying you're not talking to the fans, no, that's you know what, you're always talking to the fans. I mean, media, whether you like the media or not, they very much are a liaison from coach and player and team to fan base. So when you speak in those types of terms, you better walk very carefully. And I think in the case of Brandon Staley, he hasn't built up nearly enough equity to, you know, to be talking in those terms when you're talking about a team that, you know, pretty consistently, and this even, you know, this dates goes back before him, in fairness to him, but underachieves. We've talked about this with the Ravens now the last couple of years. I mean, not so much this year, but last year and the year before that, in terms of, you know, the some of their, you know, the sum being greater than the parts, right? And doing more with less. The Pack or the Chargers are kind of the opposite of that, right? They do less with more, it feels like. So, and I say that thinking, you know, I think very highly of Justin Herbert. That's why I give them a chance in this football game, absolutely. But, you know, you just look at the coaching, you know, you look at, you know, some of the untimely injuries they've had at different times. I mean, it's just, you mentioned stadium, lack of juice in LA. I mean, Los Angeles is more interested in the Rams, USC, you know, even though USC's kind of, you know, has been disappointing this year, but Rams, USC, and even the Raiders have more juice. Still, all these years later, the Raiders have more juice than the Chargers do in LA right now. And this is certainly not this 2023 Chargers team, certainly not the team that's going to change that narrative. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But yeah, that's a franchise that, despite having a quarterback who I think is really, really good, it doesn't feel like they're going anywhere right now, at least with Brandon Staley at the helm.
Right. Let's switch gears briefly, Luke. Let's talk about the Steelers and the Browns matchup this past Sunday. Then we'll go to Ravens-Bengals Thursday night. We'll circle back to the Chargers-Ravens Sunday night. But tape that game. I know that you watched the game as well. Jalen Warren, it appeared to my untrained eyes a year ago, he was a better running back than Najee Harris, had much more juice, much more explosion. He was the offense for the Steelers this past Sunday, but now they fire Matt Canada, which is a very atypical Steelers move. That makes you wonder, did this come down from ownership? Was this a Mike Tomlin decision? But in Canada's defense, and believe me, there's been plenty of blame he deserves, but Pickett looked awful. I mean, he couldn't hit water falling out of a barn this past Sunday.
Well, I mean, I think it comes down to this. And look, Matt Canada was interim coach for Maryland several years back in the wake of a really difficult time for that program. So, I don't have any axe to grind, but I think you just look at his body of work, which included the end of Ben Roethlisberger's career. And I get it. Ben wasn't the Ben Roethlisberger of 8 years prior to that or 10 years prior to that. But, yeah, it's just not good enough. It's not good enough across the board. So the reality is, to me, you get to a point where you need to kind of start eliminating variables to figure out what exactly the problem is. And I think this was the path that I would have gone, quite frankly. One, I don't think I would have brought Matt Canada back after last year. I think, you know, you saw towards the end of the year enough glimpses of Kenny Pickett at least doing some nice things in the fourth quarter, including against the Ravens in that Sunday night game. So it's not as though he hasn't shown anything. At the same time, that offense is just, I mean, it's just, it doesn't have enough juice to it. So I think where they stand right now, and I do think this was a Mike Tomlin decision ultimately. I mean, I do. I think some of the speculation, and look, I don't spend a lot of time on this, but I read some stuff that comes out of Pittsburgh. I mean, there had been some talk that, you know, because Canada was under contract, they didn't want to fire him because they didn't want to pay two offensive coordinators, you know. So, I mean, so much of that's conjecture, and you don't really know the full story, especially when you don't follow it that closely. But I think the reality is for them the rest of the way, I agree with you on Jalen Warren. Not that Najee Harris doesn't have ability, but I think you need to lean into that more. But you gotta run more play action. You gotta do more off of your running game. That it just feels like there was no rhyme or reason to what they try to do offensively, other than Kenny Pickett doesn't push the ball down the field whatsoever. Now, to your point, and this is where Pittsburgh is trying to figure this out for the rest of this year, they got to find out what they have with Kenny Pickett. And if he looks as bad, if not worse, than he did with Matt Canada as the offensive coordinator, then I think Pittsburgh probably has their answer in terms of what they need to do this offseason, which is do whatever you can to maneuver to try to get a franchise quarterback, because I just think that's where you are. But if, and what they have kind of a, almost like a two-headed monster that they're using with what they promoted. Obviously, they promoted one of the position coaches to offensive coordinator. Another one's going to call plays, though. So, you know, whatever that dynamic is, and, you know, who knows? I mean, that's less than ideal, you know, especially when you don't have someone who's has an extensive history of calling plays. But, you know, but if they can figure some things out and their offense can look better, Kenny Pickett can look better, then, you know, you have a little more information that you've gained. But I just think it's so difficult for them. I mean, it's a good Pittsburgh defense, but is it? It's not at the level of Cleveland's defense. It's not at the level of the Ravens' defense. So it's really tough to try to win that way, especially in 2023. I mean, their running game's gotten going, and certainly, I mean, Warren's a heck of a player. I mean, he's impressive. And you know, I'm not anti Najee Harris, but I agree with you. I think Warren, I see those two, and I'd rather play Warren a little bit more. But you know, you have the running game. So if you have the running game, have a good defense, you know, could that get them in the playoffs still as a wild card? Sure. I mean, you have three wild cards, and you know, you Cincinnati at this point, you know, that Joe Burrow's done. You know, Buffalo looked much better this past week, but they're 6-5, and you just look at their schedule and you say, man, how many wins are they going to get? Even if they are fixed, it's going to be tough for them.
Oh, they got to go to Philadelphia this week. They're playing the Eagles.
Right, right. So I'm not writing off Buffalo, believe me, especially from a true talent level, but just mathematically speaking, you know, that's why, you know, it's fascinating to see where the Browns are right now, and even bringing in Joe Flacco, even though I'm not nearly as convinced as some people that he's just going to step into the starting role there. But he's certainly a factor. You know, he is an interesting point. But, you know, so teams like Cleveland and Pittsburgh, who are offensively challenged, they're right in the thick of things, because you have other teams like the LA Chargers that we were just talking about, where you look at them and say, okay, on paper, they look talented. On paper, they've, you know, and even you watch them game to game, they've got certain players. I mean, you know, there are 25 teams in the league that would dream to have Justin Herbert right now, but they're doing less with more. It just feels like week after week. But in the case of the Steelers, are they going to be able to, are they going to be able to kind of pile up enough offense? You know, can you find your way like a scavenger hunt to come up with, you know, some things that you can do more consistently on offense to be a little bit more consistent? I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, be more productive. I mean, Mike Tomlin said it, and it was kind of a flippant remark, but well, he was asked, you know, what he wants to see differently about the offense, and he just said, score points.
You know, what,
I mean, you know, it's a Captain Obvious statement, but he's not wrong. You know, I mean, that's kind of where they are right now.
But I didn't care for his remark when he said that the Browns defense makes a lot of offenses look bad. You know, to me, it's one thing to say, hey, give credit to the Browns. They played hard. But
yeah,
if that was my head coach, and believe me, I have all the respect in the world for Mike Tomlin. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the context he said in, but it really doesn't matter because he said the Browns defense makes a lot of offenses look bad. Well, coach, your offense also gets paid to score points.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no question about that. And I think, look, that statement is true. However, when you are struggling to score points on a week by week basis, that argument doesn't. And by the way, Brandon Staley offered a similar sentiment about his defense in that Green Bay game. His defense wasn't I wouldn't even say his defense was the main reason they lost that football game. You know, but at the same time, when you have a defense that ranks near the bottom of the NFL, I mean, come on, man. Like, you know, don't insult our intelligence. So you're right about that. I will say, in fairness, I'll stick up for Mike Tomlin a little bit here, but I generally speaking, I agree with what you said about that comment.
It's just a defeatist remark. That's all.
Oh, it totally is. I will say this, and look, does this explain why their offense has been as bad as it has been? No, not even close. But if you look at DVOA and look at some other analytics metrics, offensively, they have had a tough schedule as far as their opposing defenses. And a big part of it is they play the Ravens, they play the Browns, you know, right off the bat, and then go look at some of their other opponents they face. But is that the primary reason why their offense has been bad? No, of course not. You know, that's a sliver of the pie, and I'm with you. Ultimately, I think, you know, in the case of someone like Mike Tomlin, or if we would talk about John Harbaugh or a coach of that ilk who's been around a long time, they should know better. And coaches who aren't as experienced, I think you'll find, I'm not saying you're going to find grace from fans and media, but I think you'll find a little bit more at least.
Sure.
If you're just honest and say, look, we haven't been good enough in this area, and that's on me. You know, I'm the head coach. The buck stops with me. Or if, you know, if you're talking about a franchise, you know, a franchise quarterback or defensive coordinator, you know, whoever's in any kind of a position of leadership on a team, I think you're way better off just owning it and saying, yeah, we've stunk, and that's on me, and we've got to be better. And, you know, if you're Mike Tomlin, you're making the change and saying, look, I'm letting Matt Canada go, but let's not begin for a second to assume it. And you know, Tomlin shared some of these sentiments, but let's not begin to think for a second that he was our only problem. You know, this is top to bottom a problem, you know, beginning with me all the way down to the last player on our roster. And that's how you need to approach it. And if you would approach it that way, fans and media, I won't say that they're more patient, but maybe they're a little less impatient, you know, if that makes sense. So, you know, I think Pittsburgh, I mean, mathematically, they're right there in the thick of the playoff race. I mean, we kind of talked about this when, you know, it came out a couple years ago that they were adding another wild card team, you know, and having a 7-team playoff field rather than a 6. When you do that, you're inviting more mediocrity into the conversation. I mean, that's just how it's going to work. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But certainly, if you're Pittsburgh, I mean, this last 6 weeks of the season, very critical for them. They've got to figure out if Kenny Pickett looks any better, if he takes any steps forward, if it truly was more of a coaching and scheme issue, or if it's what I tend to think it is, probably a combination of both. I think, you know, if we always look for these very simplistic answers, you know, as media, as fans, and oftentimes it's much more complicated, and, you know, it's tough to kind of drill down and always figure out exactly what it is. But, you know, I think, you know, the truth will lie in the results here. I mean, if Kenny Pickett looks just as, you know, kind of punchless without Matt Canada, then probably tells you something. If he looks better, and the new assistants that are kind of running that show, which, understanding you're not going to completely change your offensive system in a matter of a week or two, but if they're able to untap a little more production and, you know, and certainly score some more points, then, you know, maybe that might buy Kenny Pickett another year. But certainly, this is very much an inflection point, crossroads, however you want to describe it, for that Steelers offense. Because let's face it, I mean, yeah, you've got T.J. Watt, you know, who's in his prime. You've got Cam Hayward, who's not getting any younger, was already injured this year. I mean, you know, you've got some players on that defense who are still very much the kind of defense that's a quality playoff caliber kind of defense, but, you know, they can't do it by themselves, and those guys aren't getting any younger. So you get to a point where you've got to figure this out, in the same way that the Ravens were kind of dealing with this way back when in 2008, you know, post Steve McNair, and, you know, Ray Lewis wasn't getting any younger. Ed Reed was not getting any younger. You know, Ed wasn't old at that point, but was certainly at a point where, you know, you didn't want to waste the remaining years of his prime. So, you know, they found Joe Flacco, and things worked out pretty well for the Ravens then. So hasn't worked out so well with the Steelers here, at least early on, finding the successor for Ben Roethlisberger.
He is Luke Jones, joining us here on 1570 AM on this Black Friday sale at Coons Ford, Baltimore. Also for our listeners, Sunday, hit us up on Monday as well. You can still get a deal if you happen to miss out or you're out of town this weekend. Luke, I guess the reason why we keep an eye on the Steelers and the Browns are divisional rivals. And if the Steelers, if they figure out the quarterback position, they have a good record. We play them late in the year. Last game, right? Last game of the season?
Yeah. We don't know yet whether, you know, when exactly it'll be played. It's that right. TBD, but yeah, TBD. It's that. Yep.
So they're like, to me, they're like Jason from Halloween. They're not dead until they're dead. So got to keep a close eye on them. But the Browns now, they have Dorian Thompson Robinson, a quarterback. You mentioned Joe Flacco. He looked very lean to me during this press conference. But how wild is it to see Joe Flacco in a Cleveland Browns uniform?
It's strange, right? I mean, and look, I mean, it's not, I wasn't stunned to see it because, I mean, we've seen Flacco in a Broncos jersey
Sure.
now. We've seen him in a Jets jersey. He was with the Eagles for a minute, back to the Jets. So, but it does resonate a little differently when you're talking about being in the division. And let's face it, you know, I just spent a bunch of time talking about the Steelers, and I mean, the Browns, they do have a championship caliber defense. Now, that is not to say championship caliber like the 2000 Baltimore Ravens, because we know that it's not the same kind of NFL, but it's a really good defense. And you know, we saw that with what they were able to do and limit the Ravens for some critical moments in that game, even though, you know, I mean, it was a 33-31 game, so it certainly wasn't a defensive struggle, you know, when they played a couple of weeks ago. But we've seen them, you know, we've seen them play at a high level, and the numbers don't lie. So for them, it's all about, what can you squeeze a little more production out of the quarterback position? Because they do have a pretty good running game. I mean, it's not as prolific as it is with a healthy Nick Chubb, but they've done a good job. And you know, that I didn't mention this with the Steelers, but Browns and Steelers, the reason why, as Ravens fans, even if I would agree on paper, in terms of, not even on paper, just the eyeball test, let's say, because on paper, I mean, they're right on their heels, you know, in the division. But the eyeball test tells me I think the Ravens are a much better team than the Browns and the Steelers. However, look at the remaining schedule for the Ravens, and look at the remaining schedule for the Browns and the Steelers. I mean, that's part of this, and that's not an excuse for the Ravens if they falter, but it's just the Ravens do have a little more of a challenging path the rest of the way in terms of, you know, that's why we've talked about it a lot in terms of, will they hold on to the number one seed? I mean, you know, where's Kansas? Kansas City has an easier schedule than the Ravens down the stretch. So you have to acknowledge that. That's not an excuse, built-in excuse for the Ravens, but yeah, they do have a more challenging path. So if you're the Browns, you're looking at this and saying, yeah, it's a bummer. It stinks that Deshaun Watson's not out there, because it seems like he was finally starting to turn the corner. I mean, we talked about it a couple weeks ago. I mean, kind of, you know, reminded you of a Steve McNair, you know, the way he played in the second half against that Ravens defense, and which, let's face it, no one had really done anything like that against the Ravens defense in a while, you know, so that was impressive. So I think in a perfect world, Cleveland would love to see the rookie be able to handle the job from the standpoint of, he does have some mobility. He can do some things athletically that Joe Flacco is just not going to be able to do, and same with PJ Walker as well. So, but at the same time, is it going to be enough? You know, you're talking about a fifth round rookie. I do think it's interesting to bring in Joe Flacco from the standpoint of, I mean, their skill set doesn't match up at all, really. You know, just based on what the kind of player we think DTR is going to be compared to the player Joe Flacco was, you know. But what is interesting is, Joe Flacco played a lot of meaningful football down the stretch of his rookie season. And I think that's something that, you know, maybe, and I don't even, you know, I'm not even trying to open up this can of worms at all, because we've talked about this before. Maybe in a way that he wouldn't have been quite as open and eagerly, and, you know, sharing with Lamar Jackson back in 2018, because that was different. But Joe was a pro, and we talked about that. I don't, we're not rehashing that. But this is a different example where Joe has sat at home for 4 months, and you know, he's kept himself in good shape. To your point, he does look lean, looks like he's in good shape.
He looks like a
But
swimmer.
yeah, but from that standpoint, does he have some intangibles that he might be able to impart in for a rookie quarterback who, let's face it, is not going to be asked to do a ton,
No.
but because they do the style of play that they do have. I mean, the Ravens didn't ask Joe Flacco in 2008 to do a ton, but
No,
can
but
he?
if the Browns can't run the ball, Luke, this kid, he just, not this year, maybe not next year, maybe never. He just doesn't seem like he has the
Yeah.
skill set to move the ball down the field.
I hear you.
If
Right. No, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No. What I'm saying to you, just I just don't see it, which is why, you know, they brought in Joe. And Joe, as long as If the offensive line can keep him upright, he can still do damage. And I don't know. I know that we're missing the top three tackles when they played us. I know their left tackle's out for, I don't know, 4 or 5 games. I don't know what their state of the offensive line is. But if they can keep him upright, I mean, Joe can throw the ball still.
Yeah, I think where I'm just – look, you know, I've been a Joe Flacco guy for a long time. I think what would worry me from that standpoint is – I don't think Joe can do that if he doesn't have a running game with him, because pass defense, you know, pass rushes can just absolutely tee off on him. To your point, I when healthy, the Browns have a better offensive line than it's shown at times, but that offensive line isn't where it was a couple years ago, where it was really, really elite of elite. And I would say this. Couldn't the same argument have been made about the Jets last year? I mean, the Jets had a really good defense last year. And I know they lost Breece Hall, so their running game certainly wasn't there. But let's face it. I mean, that wasn't a high bar for – and I get it. Maybe the Jets were in a different headspace in terms of where they were with Zach Wilson a year ago. But they benched him last year. And they seem more inclined to want to go with Mike White than Joe Flacco. So I just – I don't know. I think it would be a – boy – it would be such an interesting story, especially if you're talking about a case where the wild card Browns came into Baltimore and Joe Flacco's their quarterback. But I just don't know if Joe has much left at this point. And look, I hope I'm wrong. I think it would make for a fun story. I know he's with the Browns, and look, I'm not expecting any Ravens fan to root against the Ravens, but at the same time, I think there's some serious intrigue about the idea of Joe Flacco potentially being in the playoffs with the Browns. But I just don't know. I mean, he's going to be, 39 years old in January? I don't know if he's got a whole lot left at this point. So I still think the best path for the Browns to not only make the playoffs, but maybe have a chance to make it to the divisional round, let's say, which would, to me, would be a really successful season for them, given, you know, given the injuries they've had. But I still think maybe their best path to being able to do that is figuring out a way for Thompson Robinson to, you know, play over his head a little bit and, you know, not do anything spectacular, but, you know, you kind of do some of the things the Ravens did with Lamar Jackson in 2018. And, you know, you kind of run an offense that way and it's very play action dependent and, you know, throw the ball to Njoku, throw the ball to Amari Cooper, run the ball a heck of a lot and play great defense. So, you know, I think they'd like the young kid to bring to be able to do that, but can he do it? There's obviously skepticism there, but at the same time, I just, you know, I saw Joe Flacco play for the Jets last year, and you know he beat those same Browns in a miraculous late game comeback, but there was a whole lot of him not playing well last year too, which is a reason why the Jets, you know, ultimately, you know, relegated him to backup and third string, and then the Jets knew him really well when Rodgers went down. They could have brought Joe Flacco back and they didn't.
That's a great point.
Maybe the Jets are just dumb. And look, the Jets might be dumb. You know, they're the Jets.
Well, but, Luke, speaking of dumb, Luke, what about Josh Dobbs? What about the Browns trading away Joshua Dobbs to the Cardinals? I'm very grateful that he's not in our division quarterback in the Browns, because I think we can all agree upon that, that he's a better player than DTR right now.
Or Joe Flacco at this point.
Joe Flacco. He's playing some good football. And that would have changed the dynamic of the division for sure.
And what's funny about that, he was a Steeler at one point in time too.
Oh,
so
my.
You know, maybe...
How about that? How about that? Right. Yeah, but the division is a mess at quarterback, right? And let's not forget now, and we'll talk about this. We have Jake Browning, undrafted free agent, right? Used to be with the Vikings, now with the Bengals. And we don't know what we have with him. I know he got a touchdown late against the Ravens in garbage time, but that didn't mean a whole lot. So I'm curious to see how he does against the Steelers at home this weekend.
Yeah, sure. And I'll say this in defense of Browning. I thought for someone who had only had attempted one NFL pass, and I think it only played 4 snaps, I think it was. Remember, he was on practice squads his first few years. I mean, he was never even active for you know, to play in a game. I thought he actually acquitted himself pretty well. Like he didn't look like someone who had no idea what he was doing. Now, it's not Joe Burrow. That's the Captain Obvious statement. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I think the problem, unlike the Steelers, unlike the Browns, Bengals, their defense kind of stinks. I mean, that to me was, you know, you look at that game and look, Who knows what would have happened if Joe Burrow doesn't go down? I mean, the Bengals had just taken the lead with, what, 5 minutes to go in the second quarter. I mean, it probably would have been a back-and-forth kind of affair. But I think what was so – if you're a Bengals fan, what's so discouraging, you know, beyond the fact that Burrow's done for the year, and obviously the Ravens have been in that position the last 2 years with Lamar Jackson, even if it wasn't an official done for the year.
Sure.
The writing was on the wall after a while, but – that defense stinks. I mean, that defense has been bad. You know, they had a couple good performances right around the bye week where it's like, okay, this looks more like the Bengals defense of the last couple years. But I mean, there was still a path for them to have a chance at least in that Thursday night game if their defense played well, and their defense stunk the rest of the way. You know, that talk about you look at the contrast of what their defense did losing Joe Burrow compared to how the Ravens defense played down the stretch last year without Lamar Jackson. And, you know, to me, that's a little bit about, you know, what's under the hood there. You know, that to me, that's a little bit of a gut check right there that they did not pass whatsoever. So that's where, you know, I'm not nearly as, and the other factor for the Bengals, unlike the Steelers and the Browns that I mentioned, they've got a really tough schedule the rest of the way too. So I think the Bengals are done. Steelers and And blessings and say your prayers and keep your fingers crossed that Lamar Jackson stays upright, because certainly the Ravens have dealt with that reality the last couple of years. And even in Thursday night's game, seeing him limp around some, and, you know, he's not on the injury report, so it looks like the ankle's fine, but that is something to keep in the back of their mind. But, you know, it's a quarterback driven league. We talk about that. And, you know, even if you have a quarterback that you're not sure of, you'd still rather have him on the field. You know, in the case of Deshaun Watson, you know, as much as he's, you know, at best been up and down for the Browns, certainly rather have him than what they're dealing with now. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out, but the Ravens, you know, they're in the driver's seat right now in this division, but they've got to stay there. And, you know, there's still a lot of football to be played against some tough opponents, even tougher than certainly what they're facing Sunday night facing the Chargers.
All right, Luke, staying with the Ravens Bengals game, Logan Wilson, some controversy there about, hip drop tackles, whatever you want to call them. And look, I don't know how you're supposed to take down a 260-pound Pro Bowl / All-Pro tight end. I mean, you're trying to get the guy down. This guy's playing whistle to whistle. He's physical. And the NFLPA hasn't made a big deal out of those type of tackles. And at some point, you got to let these guys play football. We have that. But we also have the loss of Mark Andrews. And please speak about the impact this is going to have on a Ravens offense for the rest of the year. I know we know Coach Harbaugh said maybe late in the playoffs he comes back, but you got to get there first. You have to progress there before there's any kind of conversation about, you know, Andrews coming back. But what a severe blow. I mean, we didn't lose our starting quarterback like the Bengals did, but still a significant loss for the Ravens.
It is. And to touch on your first point about the hip drop tackles, I agree with you 1,000%. Look, it stinks that Dennis Pitta. There's a Freudian slip talking
and
about
one, yep,
tight ends getting hurt. But it stinks to lose Mark Andrews. It really does. And I'll get, you know, we'll talk about the impact of that. But I'm with you from the standpoint of let's call a spade here, Dennis. How many fans and media types even had heard of the term hip drop tackle 3 years ago?
No one.
Was it part of the game then?
Yeah.
You know, you didn't call it a hip drop tackle. You called it a tackle, right? So I'm with you. And I kind of, you know, Patrick Queen was at the podium, you know, right after John Harbaugh made the announcement after the Thursday night game that, you know, Andrews was likely lost for the year. And, you know, he was empathetic. I mean, you're talking about his teammate, but he also said, you know, it's football. And so, I mean, I'll say this much. If we're going to eliminate the hip drop tackle now, which I'm guessing it's going to be, we're going to get to a point where I'm going to just cut off people when I hear them complain about defenses not being good.
Right.
Because it just gets to a point where it's just like, what do you want these guys to do?
Right.
You already have them in some case, and this has probably happened a couple times, but you're going to see guys get hurt you're going to see defenders get hurt in the pocket at some point in time because they are trying to avoid landing on a quarterback, and you're going to see a guy land on his shoulder or something like that. And yeah, I'm being a tiny bit facetious, but the point is every single rule that's put in place is meant to restrict and limit the defense and make the offenses more prolific. And now we've gotten to a point where finally the defenses from a schematic standpoint have caught up a little bit, and we've seen this balancing out. And now we want to say, well, we want to take out hip drop tackles. So if Logan Wilson doesn't do that, you know what happens? Dennis or Mark Andrews probably runs right through the tackle into the end zone. And, you know, and then probably someone says, oh man, these guys can't tackle.
Right.
Well,
and we saw a lot of, so, I mean, I saw a lot of poor tackling in the three Thanksgiving games. I mean, a lot of really, really poor tackling. Ravens, by and large, are a very good tackling team. So when you see three games where you see poor tackling, it really stands out.
It does. And you know why the tackling has gotten so poor? Because these guys don't practice it very much anymore. And a big part of that is there's so many restrictions on the padded practices and things of that nature throughout training camp. So I'm with you 1,000% on your overall sentiment. It stinks that Mark Andrews got hurt. And I'm very aware of the statistical data that does show when it's a hip drop situation that the chances for an injury increase, you know, many times. I understand that. At the same time, it's football. At the same time, we're not going to eliminate injuries unless we just want to eliminate football and
two-hand touch
and just play flag or, you know, whatever it is. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's the truth. But to answer the second part of your question, I mean, look, you're so, I mean, even fans, because, you know, as fans, there's that tribalism, there's that loyalty, there's that not wanting to give up on your football team. So there's always that reflex. When someone goes down, what do you say?
Next man up. Next man up.
And look, that applies and that's appropriate for, I mean, literally speaking, you know, like, or not literally, but, you know, if you're talking about, yes, it applies to every single player. You're not packing it in and calling it a season. And let's be clear, I'm not at all suggesting the Ravens are Super Bowl hopes are dashed. There's one player they could lose where I'd say, forget about the Super Bowl, and it's Lamar Jackson. However, I do think Mark Andrews is on a very short list, with the only players that I might put ahead of him at this point in time being, of course, Lamar Jackson and probably Roquan Smith. I would have said Marlon Humphrey, but we've seen how well the defense has played even without him this year. Yeah. I would have said Ronnie Stanley a couple years ago, but Ronnie Stanley's not the same Ronnie Stanley of 4 years ago. So I think you could make a very strong argument that Mark Andrews is, you know, behind Lamar. Lamar's way up here. And for anyone that's not looking on the video, I'm holding my hand way up in the air. And Roquan Smith, I would have like here. Mark Andrews is probably, right below Roquan Smith.
And naturally, his ranking is higher on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, it's Lamar's security blanket, yeah, third down guy, first guy he looks for in the red zone. I mean, that's what he does. And I've heard people say, well, now this will force Lamar to go through his progression and spread out the ball more.
It might.
But you're not better without Mark Andrews. I have an 89 jersey. I wore it to the blackout Thursday night. I love Mark Andrews. I know he's got the diabetes that he deals with during the games and during the week, of course. But you can't lose a player of his caliber and think that you're going to get better or it's not going to affect you adversely.
Exactly. I mean, I put it this way. Do I think the Ravens can still win a Super Bowl without Mark Andrews? Yeah, I do. Do I think the road has become more challenging now? Absolutely. Because, and Lamar even said this. He said this after the game, and he said this when he spoke to the media on Tuesday, that it's his off-script guy. I mean, think about it. For as much as maybe their passing game is playing more in structure than it and has a better structure than it did under Greg Roman, sure. Do they have better wide receivers now than they did under Greg Roman? And John Harbaugh even alluded to this earlier in the week, that they're probably better equipped to endure the loss of Mark Andrews now than last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. But this is, you said it, and this isn't a knock on Lamar Jackson. You'd say the same exact thing if Travis Kelce went down for Patrick Mahomes And maybe that's a little more exaggerated this year because the Chiefs are having certainly having their issues at the wide receiver position. But that guy that you go to when things are a mess with your offense, how many times have we seen the Ravens offense, including sometimes this year, mind you, where it's not clicking and it's not looking great and Lamar looks out of sorts and they're not running the ball to the same level that they'd like, at least between the tackles. And what do? Two things. There are two off-script things that have been beautiful for the Ravens for years now. It's Lamar Jackson taking off and running and using his historic scrambling ability as a quarterback and rushing ability as a quarterback. And what's the other? Lamar Jackson going off script and throwing a ball up to Mark Andrews and he makes a play. And now that's a credit to both of them, you know, because it's almost innate, the chemistry that they have, but it's not, you know, Isaiah Likely is not going to just come in and do the same things. That doesn't mean Isaiah Likely can't do a good job, mind you, but there's a lot of time on task that Andrews and Jackson have together. I mean, these guys were rookies together. So that hurts you. I mean, it just does. And I think what's a little more difficult, and look, the point you made, and it's a point that I've written about at BaltimorePositive.com. If there is a silver lining to this from a long-term perspective, it's not a silver lining to me that increases their chances of winning the Super Bowl this year. But if there is a long-term silver lining, it might make Lamar Jackson an even better player for the long run, not having Mark Andrews out there. But you certainly want him out there because he's a hell of a player. So that's where it is tough, because it's not just losing the production, losing his talent, losing what he does individually, but he is a player that defenses have had to account for and scheme for and plan for that. I don't know if, you know, I don't think you're plugging Isaiah Likely into the exact Mark Andrews. And Likely even said himself that they're not exactly the same player. You know, they're a different kind of player.
They're different players, Luke, but what I just thought of is that as an offense, you're better off having Mark Andrews on the field versus Isaiah Likely and Charlie Kohler. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Both of them. I mean, the offense is better with, call it, three wide receivers and Andrews, or two wide receivers and Kohler and Likely. Those two guys don't make up what he is. And I thought a knock on them. It's just, it's actually to compliment how good he is.
Yeah. That's why I bristle when I just hear someone say next man up when you lose a player of Andrews's caliber.
Not that easy.
Because, and look, I understand everyone's saying it to try to make themselves feel better, right? I mean, really, that's what it is. Because everyone knows you're not canceling the season. I mean, the game's going to go on. The team's going to go on. But to me, it's a slap in the face to that player. Or in the case of someone who's making that much money, it's like, why the heck? If it's just next man up and it's not a big deal, why the heck are you paying them all that money then? You know, so it is a big deal. But I think the other thing, it's not just going from Andrews to Likely or Kohler, you know, whoever's on the field for him at any given point. Or, hey, Patrick Ricard's probably, we're going to see more of him as an inline tight end, even more than we've already seen. Because that's, you know, Andrews quietly over the last couple of years, not that he's doing it all game, but he's a way better blocker than he gets credit for too. So that's a factor as well. But I think for me, it's not just losing Mark Andrews. It's what happens with how teams defend Zay Flowers and Odell Beckham Jr. and Nelson Aguilar and Rashad Bateman and those, you know, everything. How do teams defend the run game knowing Mark Andrews isn't part of that equation anymore? I think it impacts all of those things. Now, that doesn't mean I think their offense is done. That doesn't mean I think they're doomed, but it does become much more difficult. And, you know, it certainly doesn't help as we kind of, you know, we've been talking about this from 30,000 feet now as we focus in on this week. It doesn't help that the Ravens are banged up at wide receiver. You know, Zay Flowers, you know, dealing with, you know, a sore hip this week. Bateman had a scare, even though he was fine, you know, full participant on Thursday. So I assume he's fine, but I saw it, Dennis. I mean, he went to the ground and was holding his left foot, which was his surgically repaired foot, which I think was a very scary couple moments. But he said after practice he was fine, and he was a full go the following day. So, you know, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But you've got Beckham with the shoulder, and, you know, moving on from Mark Andrews. And again, I'm with you. If he's back for the AFC Championship game, then beautiful. But you got to get there, and you're not planning on that. I mean, there's no way to plan for that. You're going to have to see how his ankle progresses. So, you know, no one knows right now. You don't plan for that. But I think what was frustrating for me is you're finally seeing a more explosive version of Odell Beckham the last couple of weeks, but now he's dealing with the shoulder. And that's kind of a reminder right there. Not that the shoulder is going to affect his explosiveness, but you love if you can sign up and tell me that you're going to get this version of Odell Beckham the rest of the year, then I feel better about their chances of enduring without Mark Andrews. But are you going to have that version of Beckham the rest of the year? Because, you know, and I give him credit, you know, I've been skeptical on the Odell Beckham thing, but the last couple of weeks, he's looked really good. I mean, I've been impressed. I mean, he's looked more explosive. And I think what's interesting, and to me, this is also part of the equation that you have to keep in mind. Also, the last two games, when he's looked at his best, two lowest snap counts of the year for him. You know, they have put him on much more of a pitch count. So I think you have to do that at the same time when you don't have Mark Andrews on the field for 60 snaps a game. You know, again, where are you getting that more that consistent production from? So this is going to be fascinating to see how everyone handles this from Todd Monken and Lamar Jackson on down. I think, you know, they're certainly going to have to recalibrate their offense. I think you're probably going to see, to me, as much as people are going to be focused on Likely and Kohler, I think you're going to see more three wide receiver sets. You know, I think you're going to see them try to spread out a little bit more. And that doesn't mean throwing the ball more necessarily, but it might be that they try to run from more three and four wide receiver sets and try to get teams caught in some lighter run boxes. So, you know, it's going to be, you know, and I just, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. Got to run the ball. You know, they've run the ball very well. Don't get me wrong. They're going to have to continue to run the ball very well because, again, that Mark Andrews third down factor, you're not going to have that as much. So what do you do to avoid that? Don't be in third down as much. So stay on schedule, get big chunk plays in the running game on first and second down. And if you can do that, that does alleviate some of the loss of Mark Andrews there. So it's going to be a collective effort. John Harbaugh said this, and you know, it sounds like coach speak, but I think it applies with someone like Andrews, you know, and we've talked about, you know, obviously you lose your quarterback. That's a totally different conversation, but you know, you lose an Andrews, Marlon Humphrey, look at how they've played without him, but these have been collective efforts. It hasn't been just, oh, one guy steps in and is as good as that player or almost as good as that player. You know, to replace Mark Andrews, it's going to take probably five or six different guys stepping up and giving a little bit more. And if you do that, not saying that can't happen. I mean, it can happen and they can still be a really good offense, but certainly becomes much more difficult. And again, where you're going to miss it, third down, red zone, and just those times when things just aren't going well and you're not feeling great. And let's face it, how many times have we seen Lamar throw a pass up and you kind of say, what is he doing? And then Mark Andrews makes an unbelievable catch in double coverage or something like that. You know, you throw that to Isaiah Likely or you throw that to a wide receiver, it's probably a better chance it's going to be intercepted. So again, Andrews, someone who makes everyone better. Lamar makes him better too, let's be clear. But Lamar would be, you know, flat out said, you know, he's one of the guys that he credits for making him the kind of player he is. So, you know, you lose that, it's definitely going to be tough. And, you know, we're going to have to see how this offense evolves without him over the coming weeks.
Look, let's wrap up with the rest of the injury report, the guys that are practicing, guys that are questionable, limited, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, I think you look at the Ravens, and obviously this is a great time for me to promote the WNSC Baltimore Positive Tech Service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. If you're on it, you'll get the final injury report. You'll get the game day inactives sent directly to your mobile device 90 minutes prior to Sunday night's kickoff. But you look at the injury report, I've already mentioned some of the wide receivers banged up. So, Zay Flowers went from limited on Wednesday to not practicing Thursday. So keep an eye on that, you know, as you and I are talking, you know, talking in real time right before Friday's practice. So, you know, certainly if he's not out there, that would be a concern, understanding Beckham's banged up too. So just have to see there. On the positive side, and as much as we've spent time talking about bad injury news, Marlon Humphrey is practicing this week, albeit limited. Do you want to push too hard there? It is a calf injury. That's a high setback frequency kind of an injury. So I think you got to be very careful there, but a good sign and at least a chance of him playing on Sunday night. and Ronnie Stanley, who was even a full go on Thursday. Again, another situation where I think you need to – Harbaugh downplayed this the other day, but he was asked about it, and I think it was a good question. When you do have the bye week to follow, do you have to kind of approach some of those health situations differently? And John said no. But I think behind closed doors, I think you absolutely are. So, yeah, we'll see about Stanley. We'll see about Marlon Humphrey, but they are practicing this week, which is great news. At least indicates that you would feel really good that even if they don't go Sunday night, that they're going to be back right after the bye, which is what you want. You know, the final five games, a stretch run. You know, here we go. It's not going to be a marathon anymore once you come out of the bye week. So, but, you know, you kind of look at those, you know, that Damarian Williams is designated to return off IR. You know, I'm guessing we probably don't see him this week because he hasn't practiced since early in training camp. But, you know, they're really, for me, it's the wide receiver position right now. Not necessarily that I am expecting any of these guys to miss Sunday night's game, but you do have a bunch of guys that are banged up and less than 100%. When you couple that with Mark Andrews not playing Sunday night, no, you know that. That is where things get a little more dicey. So, running game, fire up the running game. I know you love to cite Terrell Suggs, right? Talking about, bring your defense and your running game on the road. It travels. If the Ravens can do that.
Yep.
This is
in your running game.
Yeah. This is the kind of game where, you know, I don't want to test Lamar's ankle too much, even though, you know, he's not on the injury report and he seems fine, but this might be one of those games where you do lean on your run game a little more and maybe a few more design runs for Lamar, and certainly Gus Edwards and Keaton Mitchell, get them going. And like I said, this is a Chargers defense that statistically doesn't look quite as bad against the run as the pass, but yeah, I don't think they're particularly great at stopping the run either. So, you know, I think do what you can, especially on the road, considering you're banged up, try to shorten the game, get an early lead, and really try to, you know, that's a team that, you know, we talked about their coach, we talked about where they are with injuries. You know, they're 4-6, so I mean they're not in great position in terms of their playoff positioning and wild card hopes. So you jump on them early, I think there's a good chance you'll get that team really wilting quickly. So I think that's going to be key. But yeah, certainly some health situations to monitor between now and Sunday night, that's for sure.
Just as the Ravens are worse off without Mark Andrews, so are the Chargers without Joey Bosa. So that on the defense, like you said, it's had trouble stopping the run. It's a recipe for disaster. If they can fire up Gus Edwards and Keaton Mitchell, give Mitchell some opportunity to get those like boxes as well, be able to use the speed. That could also be a game changer. Luke, with that, please tell our listeners where they can find you on 1570 AM Baltimore Positive WNST, all the great stuff you do, your blog and everything else.
Absolutely. I encourage everyone to follow us on Twitter at WNSC. You can follow me personally at Baltimore Luke. Check out my blog at BaltimorePositive.com, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. The latest injury report. I'll have my 12 Ravens thoughts with a prediction for Sunday night as the Ravens try to improve to 9-3 going into the bye week. I think that would make everyone feel great, but the bye week will be good for the Ravens regardless of what happens Sunday night. Certainly need some rest and get some of these guys healed up after a long, long stretch of playing football without a break. You want to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive Text Service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. Any significant local sports news sent directly to your mobile device. And of course, anything throughout the week on AM 1570 with Nestor. Any Ravens players and coaches interviews from Owings Mills, check out all of that. Also, post-game reaction from Los Angeles as well at BaltimorePositive.com.
All right, Luke, I'm going to need to take a little power nap before the game Sunday night. Last Friday was rough after the late game at the stadium for me. At 5 o'clock, when it was time to knock off of work and go home. That couldn't come quick enough. And, you know, I love coming to work. But I'll take my power nap in addition to, I'm sure I'll be joined by thousands of other Ravens faithful in my age group. And hopefully we'll have another Ravens victory. So thank you for all you do.
Absolutely. Appreciate that, Dennis. And you'll have a chance to enjoy the bye week after Sunday night. So you'll have some time to rest up. But
That's right.
Appreciate you, Dennis. Grateful for your friendship, your support, and your support from Coons, of course. So I'm glad you had a great Thanksgiving, and a happy Thanksgiving. Happy holidays to everyone listening.
Thank you, my friend. There he goes. Luke Jones here, 1570 AM WNST. We'll take our first break and come back right after this.